It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. KMTS Connections connects you to everything that matters in the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show. Dennis Davidson is here, formerly of the NRCS, now working for the conservation districts in our area. So you retire once, you go back to work just to stay out of trouble, right?
Like that. Yeah.
Peter Dodd is here. He's the secretary and treasurer of the Southside Conservation District. We'll talk about a couple events a little bit later on, but today the intent is to be a little more general in a conversation about conservation districts and what they are and why they're important to everybody, whether you've got 1,000 acres or 1 acre or a city lot.
Exactly. Keep the natural resources under control and managed correctly.
Now, the conservation districts actually came out of the Dust Bowl back in the 30s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And locally, conservation districts came into existence in the 50s sometime.
Pretty much that's what happened. The Soil Conservation Act of 1935 is what established conservation districts across the nation and set up the framework that districts could follow to bring in technical assistance. Employees would come in after conservation district was set up. Federal government provided those services if a local group of landowners would establish a conservation district.
Were all three of the local conservation districts formed at the same time, or was one before the
other?
You
question,
told me you wanted to talk about history.
Actually, the districts here were much different when they were established. Hmm. There was a conservation district that was just called the Rifle District. It combined with part of what's now called the Conservation District or the Bookliff Conservation District.
Okay.
So that's when those two districts combined, they picked up the area down towards Rulison and Parachute on both sides of the river. But the Bookliff District, for the most part, was always on the north side, and that's what was handled out of Rifle.
Okay.
Because we had an NRCS, our SCS office in Rifle back in the 60s.
Would that have been located at the old Division of Wildlife building at the intersection of Highway 6 and Highway 13?
No.
Okay.
It's in what is currently the Credit Union building.
Oh, okay. At the corner of 2nd and, I'm sorry, yeah, 3rd and West.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Interesting. So that was once the federal building, in quotes.
Yeah, somewhat, yes, right.
And stayed that way, it looks like, huh?
And yeah, right, in some ways. Interesting. And, of course, now, again, we have three conservation districts in this area. We've got the Bookliff, which is north of the river.
Down to Rifle.
And west of Glenwood. Then you've got the south side, which is basically same area, only south of the Colorado River. I should be specific about which river I'm talking about.
There you go.
Then you've got the Mount Sopras Conservation District, which is south of Glenwood.
And all of Pitkin County.
Yeah. Okay, so Pitkin County and south of Glenwood. Okay.
And when these districts combined, like when Bookliff District and Rifle District combined, their age date starts when they combined. They never were able to back up and say they started in 1945. It's when they combined, they started a new district. So that's
so
the current age.
That's the date that matters.
Right.
Interesting. So kind of all the history before that is forgotten. It goes away.
Scattered around in some old scrapbooks.
Right. That would actually be an interesting, like for Ag Day or something like that, see, you know, what kind of artifacts people still have hanging around.
That's a good idea. We're going to bring that into Ag Expo.
Well, you've got till next February to talk
sift
about that.
The pile up.
Peter, you are kind of like me, although not exactly in all ways, but your grandpa had land, I guess it would be on the Bookliff District.
Great-grandpa.
Great-grandpa, okay.
Yeah.
And so you've got a long history of farming and using the land.
And my grandpa, when he moved to Avon, he was actually president of the Eagle Conservation District. I don't know if it was called the Eagle Conservation District at that time, but he was a president up there. I think it was called the Soil Conservation District or something of that nature. And they did projects up there.
Dennis, you have any?
I can't add to that. And I helped the Eagle District out for about 5 years, but I can't add to the history.
Interesting.
It was so probably in the 40s and 50s.
So yeah. You're kind of following in the family footsteps, the family business, you
I guess
say.
So. I'm finding this out later on, you know, what my grandpa did and stuff of that nature, because my dad didn't want to get involved in a lot of these things. He was always too busy working, and then he kind of pushed me to get more involved in local things, and so – here I am.
I kind of, yeah, we are alike in a lot of ways.
I'm glad your dad pushed you.
You right? Exactly. You obviously work very close with the, they're not called boards of the conservation district. They're called supervisors, right?
Correct.
Yeah, they are supervisors.
So, Dennis, you've worked very closely with them through your when you're working for the Natural Resources Conservation Service, as well as now you kind of work for the conservation district. Does that change what you do on a daily basis?
Since I work for them, yeah, because I pick and choose.
That's the beauty of being retired.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a different story.
The districts, like I said in the early statement, the districts had to be formed before NRCS or Soil Conservation Service, or before that Soil Erosion Service, would bring people into a local area. The Soil Conservation District had to be there. And they served landowners that were members of the Conservation District. Now they don't have to do that because there are so many programs that NRCS had to spread out and not require the need for everyone they worked with to be a conservation district cooperator.
So, Peter, how long have you been on the – I still want to call it a board. I guess it is.
It is
what it is.
I think maybe 3 to 4 years now.
Okay.
At least – I think 3 years.
How often do you meet?
Once a month.
And what do you
– Well, it depends on what discussion we're talking about. Usually for Southside's Conservation District, it's once a month. But then there's other meetings involved, you know, water planning, these soil workshops where we'll plan and stuff like that. We have subcommittees broken down to where we'll meet too for that. For the cost share programs, we'll meet, you know, probably once every 3 or 4 months for that.
How many people on the board?
We have 5 in the Southside Conservation District board.
So a subcommittee of 5 turns out to be what, 1 or 2 people?
Yeah, 2.
Okay. So you get together once a month, and it sounds like the agenda can vary depending on what, you know, you're discussing at that particular time. But maybe 3 or 4 times a year you'll talk about the cost share programs, because you actually do approve those cost share grants, right?
Correct. And so we'll meet after people have submitted them, look at them a little bit and provide a little feedback. The first step is for it to go to Dennis, Sherry, to look over to see if the paperwork's all kind of filled out. We have a good understanding if the project is something we want to approve or not. And then we'll come in and look at it. And if we have any questions, we either might approve it right there, or we might wait and ask more questions to the producer of whether, you know, they can answer a few more questions about the project. We get a better understanding of what it's going to do, where it's at. You know, we need a map to kind of give us a good idea of where this is going on and what's already there. We don't want to repeat what's already been done on projects. And we've done that. I don't know if we've done that in the past per se with one project, but
I know one of the big requirements of the matching fund grants is you don't pay for maintenance. You pay for upgrades or new projects, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, you don't want to get into that. That could be a black hole of maintenance, right, when you're talking about
the money pit.
Right, yes, exactly, exactly. So in your tenure on the Southside Conservation District, give some examples of you know, maybe not specifically mentioning who received the grant money, but maybe the smallest project you remember approving while you've been on the board, and maybe the largest project, are there any that stand out in your mind?
I remember a few projects. I remember, I think it was maybe an acre, a guy was putting in a sprinkler system, and just the amount of cost, you know, he was doing for that acre of grass he was going to grow, you know, with the sprinkler project. It was pretty enormous.
So it was like alfalfa, hay, or something like that?
Something of that nature. Okay. And then my family has partaken in the cost share program too. We, you know, when we go to vote, you know, I absent and don't get involved in that because I don't want to, approve my own.
You don't vote to give yourself money.
No, I don't think people would be proud to hear that. But yeah, we've partaken in it a few times, and it's really helped us move water around and save soil. You know, up on the south side, the water is so silty and stuff like that. That we have our property is probably a mile and a half or up to 2 miles from the start of the water where we turn it out to where it ends. And to get water that far with the silt, it just silts up everything. It silts up your ditches. They're so flat that it just silts up everything. So having a pipeline system to get water down has really, really helped us out.
Aside from the fact that you don't have a whole lot of water to work with to start with up in the Divide.
Well, like last year we were you know, we never were able to get any free river water, you know, as they say, the water resources.
Are you talking about the water call?
Yeah. Okay, we were on our – there was a call all the time last year and this year, you know.
Starting
a call.
Like in April, I think, actually.
Well, it might have been sooner than that even. But but this year, you know, there's no call. There's just water still running everywhere. It's just great.
Let's hope it stays that way for a while.
Huh? I agree.
Fill up some reservoirs. So for those of you that are listening, if I could give the Reader's Digest condensed version of what that means. So in Colorado, we go by what they call the prior appropriation water law, which means you have to find a way to get the water that you're going to use. Then you have to go to court to have the right to use that water in the future. I want to say priority number one, was it the Coors Company? I think they ended up with it from like Clear Creek going back to like 1880-something. Anyway, so everybody knows the Colorado River is over adjudicated. So there's more rights to the water than we really have water in the river most years. And obviously, it's not the same amount of water all the time. So late in the summer, when the river water starts to go down and there's not enough water to go around, we use this prior appropriation law to determine who actually gets to use that water. And the lower the number, the higher the priority. And if you're a higher number, then you get to use the water until somebody else more senior to you gets to take it. Is that pretty correct me if I
you
if
did you can, it right on the nose.
If you can judge. Shorten that any at all, please let me know.
I think you could have potential to be a water lawyer.
yeah, let's not go there. I talk about things I'm not qualified for. Water lawyers have to, well, I guess not everybody goes to court, but it just, I don't know. Always being an attorney always seems so tedious to me. You know, I remember falling to sleep to court TV when I was younger and thinking, no, the money would be nice, but the time spent and just all the paper and the words.
And the research.
Yeah.
No, thanks.
No. It's very special people that do that, and it's for a very special reason, because they're smarter than I am. By the way, if you would like to learn more about the conservation districts in our area, all three of the conservation districts in Garfield, Pickens, and not Eagle County, but no. Garfield and Pickens County anyway, are kind of operated together. It's the South Side, the Mount Soprus, and the Book Cliff Conservation District, and they all have similar websites. It's, for instance, southsidecd.org or mountsoprascd.org or bookcliffcd.org. Again, even though the money is appropriated for one of those three, if you're going to get a grant, it's all the same people pretty much that actually work there. So find one of those websites and you can find the answer to your question or call Sherry out at the office. And if she doesn't know, then nobody does. Again, so southsidecd.org. I'm going to mention that because that's where, you know, Peter is from. And so just makes the most sense to stick with that. As I mentioned, a couple events that are upcoming. We'll talk about those. Maybe talk a little bit more about the history of the conservation districts in this area and what the goal is. So came from the Dust Bowl. So how are we trying to prevent another Dust Bowl? When we come back, you're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon we're talking with Peter Dodd from the Southside Conservation District and Dennis Davidson, who does some work for all three of the local conservation districts on various projects. Again, the conservation districts and the Natural Resources Conservation Service, they help private landowners work on various projects. Again, this came from the Dust Bowl years, Conservation Service. Did you say it was the Conservation Service Act? What was it called?
It was called the Soil Conservation District Act.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like back in
1935.
I love your ringtone. Hopefully it's not Sherry calling to tell us that...
saying too much.
Again, this came from the Dust Bowl years. So how do the conservation districts help prevent, because that's the intent, right, is preventing another Dust Bowl. How have they done that for the last 90 years almost?
Good question. When we first started, we knew very little about soil. When Soil Conservation Service, Soil Erosion Service was first established, we didn't have soil scientists. We didn't have the knowledge about our soil base and all of that. And soils is one of the natural resources that all the other resources that we deal with depend on.
Okay.
Trees and roots and all the plants' roots, it's where water is stored, it's where nutrients are stored. So the soil becomes an integral part of a series of resources that we look at. So we, in the beginning, we looked at that. We didn't understand the basic science of wind erosion, how one little particle bounces and hits and bounces like in a bunch of tennis balls, and then it moves a whole bunch. Then you've got all that group of balls beginning to move. The wind adds energy, and now you got five balls moving, and they bounce. And then there's 25 balls. And the next thing you know, as it works, the wind works its way across the field, you've got a dust cloud that's coming up off of it. We didn't understand that simple process. So we had to learn all of those kinds of things before you could actually figure out control systems such as strip cropping, wind breaks, those kinds of things to keep wind erosion at bay.
I know what wind breaks are. What is strip cropping?
So like strip cropping is leaving a little section of grass left over.
Okay.
So it's like when you mow your lawn, you know, you go back and forth and back and forth, and you have this little area where you can see where you mowed it. Well, in strip cropping, it's where you have a section left that the crop is there, and then it's dirt, then it's crop, stuff like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, you've seen the aerial photos where it's green, and then it's brown, and it's green for some width, probably 150 feet, 200 feet wide.
I have never heard of that before. I feel kind of ignorant for not knowing that. Actually,
you don't see it in our Colorado River Valley. You're going to have to go north to Craig, where they do dryland wheat farming.
Okay,
and you'll see some. That's relatively new in that area. If you go out to the plains area east of Denver, on into Kansas, the use of strip crops has been there for. Since the 1950s, when the conservation districts really got started.
I think they do a lot of it in the Dakotas still.
Yeah, they do. They still do.
Interesting. Okay, well, in what we would consider to be the traditional Dust Bowl states.
Exactly.
Okay. You also mentioned, I can't remember which one of you that was talking about I guess it was Peter. You're talking about piping the irrigation water so that you don't have the erosion as well, which
or a buildup of soil. Okay. You can have a buildup if your ditch is really flat, you'll have a buildup of soil So it's going to cost you money to haul that away or do something with that sand or silt in this case.
And of course, it comes from somewhere too.
A two-sided coin. Yeah. You got the erosion section, and then you've got deposition. Doesn't matter whether you're talking about water or wind.
And here I thought that was a legal term.
What, deposition?
Yeah. Again, if you'd like to learn more about the conservation districts in our area, they always have some kind of event going on, it seems like, especially in the summer months. SouthsideCD.org, I'm giving because that's where Peter is from, is the Southside Conservation District. And we will talk about a couple of course, the big summer event is the Tour de Farms, which is kind of a half bicycle ride, half seeing what other folks are doing on their farm, and maybe get some ideas from one of the neighbors, you might say. I'm sure you've heard me tell this story before. Anytime Grandpa needed a tool, he wouldn't just go buy it. He would go look at somebody else that had one, and then he'd try and make it himself. And if he couldn't make it himself, then he'd actually go buy it. But if he could make it himself, he would. And so this is kind of like that. It's kind of seeing how the neighbors are doing things and seeing if you can get any ideas, you know, glean some knowledge, you might say. And of course, information about Tour de Farms is at bookcliffcd.org or southsidecd.org or MountSopraCD.org. That happens on August 10th. We'll talk about that more when we come back. And Ag Expo 2020, too. You're already working on this.
Oh, yeah. We're already working on lining up guest speakers and programs and so on for that. We started within 2 weeks of the end of last year.
I'm impressed. I haven't even decided what I'm going to do tomorrow, much less what I'm going to do next February.
You have to plan this stuff a long time out, because to get some of these speakers, six, 8 months out already booked.
That's a good point.
And, you know, their dates, they won't change their dates.
No, not for, you know, little rural Western Colorado anyway. Back to wrap things up in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, we're talking about the conservation districts in our area today. Peter Dodd is intimately knows about the South Side. He's the secretary and the treasurer. Dennis Davidson, of course, works for the conservation districts, has worked in the same office for a long time. I would call it the federal building. I don't know if that's really how it's referred to, but
well, we worked in several buildings, but I've been in Glenwood since 85.
That recently?
Longer than that.
All right. Again, a couple events upcoming. The Tour de Farms. What's this been going on, like 10 years or so? Longer than that? Less than that?
5 to 10. I'm not sure.
I think it was Sherry's idea because she likes to ride bikes, and she thought it would be a great way for people to experience.
Well, it's still happening every year. So
yeah, it's still happening, and she gets a good turnout?
She does. She gets a very good turnout.
It's one thing I don't have to go to.
You didn't sign up for this one, Dennis?
I didn't sign up for that one.
Yeah.
There's a maximum, too, a maximum of 50 participants in this. This year it happens on Saturday, August 10th. And, it says right, you know, if I would just read, I would learn a lot.
There's a lot of information on there to read.
The fifth annual Tour de Farms.
All right.
So you were right when you said between 5 and 10. It's fifth. This starts at 7:15 on Saturday, August 10th. It starts at the Jolly Campground on Garfield County Road 245. Plenty of parking, so they'll do a little bike check, and then I don't even see where the route is this year.
They're doing up to Harvey Gap. And back down through Peach Valley, back to Newcastle.
Okay. Do you know whose places you're going to be looking at this year?
So I think we're still working that out,
Okay. Trying
to confirm it. Where Rydens live and the new owner, we're trying to confirm that. Where Charles Ryden lived would be one stop, and then at Harvey Gap, I think, would be another stop. And then I'm not sure. We're trying to work the details out, get confirmation from everybody.
You usually do three places.
Three places,
if I remember
correct.
Right. Three farms. So right. You ride bicycle from one place to the next, and then you finally end up back. I want to say that's about a 40-mile loop. From where you start to where you'll end up.
21 miles, I think, is what it says.
Is it? It seems like 40 miles.
It didn't feel like 40 miles to me.
If it's all uphill, it's 40 miles. Huh?
Right. Hopefully it'll be, some uphill, some downhill. Because otherwise, Well, that would be the story of I tell my kids about going to school.
You get a reward
uphill
at
both
the
directions.
End. Right. You get to eat some dinner, I guess. We're going to have a caterer and stuff like that at the end. So okay. You get a reward.
And again, if you'd like more information, you can go to one of the Conservation District websites, southsidecd.org, or you can call Sherry at 404-3439. And the other thing that we were going to talk about, and every rider had, by the way, if you do the tour de farms, you have to wear a helmet. It's just a safety thing and a liability thing. Then the Ag Expo next year is, you mentioned you guys are already getting speakers signed up and that kind of thing. So you've got a date nailed down. It's Saturday, February 1st, 2020. Again, with the caliber of speakers that you've been bringing in, you have to book them that far in advance. I noticed the flyer does not yet mention any of those speakers. Is there anybody that you can tell us about yet?
So there's a couple that live in Wyoming, and they're all over social media, and they do YouTube videos. Their videos are called Our Wyoming Life. I believe their names are Mike and Aaron. I can't remember the last name off the top of my head. But they kind of document their transition from corporate life back to the ranch. And they show chores and things they do of that nature. I haven't watched a lot of their videos, but I've watched a few of them just to get an idea of what they'd be talking about. And so they're going to be giving one of the main discussions, one of the main presenters. And then they're going to break down Aaron, I think, does a little bit about prepping foods, you know, food you grow, you know, in your gardens and stuff like that, and how to prepare them and stuff of that nature. So the other presenter is a guy, a professor from Utah that we're trying to nail down to make sure he comes. And I've been listening to a podcast of him, so I'm not real sure to even discuss what he's going to be discussing because I haven't really gotten into it all that much.
It's livestock management, though.
It's more than that. It's observing your livestock and what they're eating. You know, and figuring out that they eat weeds and they eat all they.
I was gonna say, if it's cows, it's pretty much anything that's on the, you know, everything.
Well, one of the things he said was that cows that he's observed them eating 30 different plant species in one day. So they move around a lot and they're consuming a lot of different, you know, and that they know what they're consuming too. At the same time, they're not just randomly eating foods. That they're thinking about what they need, what their body needs.
Interesting. Okay, so when they're eating the sagebrush, you know, they're looking for
the oils,
roughage.
Yeah.
They're looking for roughage. Yep.
Speaking of weeds and stuff like that, summertime is when everybody's thinking about weed management and noxious weeds. I know that there are a number of different programs. Of course, Garfield County for a number of years has had some cost shares to help get rid of noxious weeds, but there's also some cost share that's available from the conservation districts, right?
Yeah, Garfield County's been very helpful to the conservation districts in terms of providing the funds. And the district just manages and selects the participants that are going to receive cost share funds based on their weeds, severity of their problem, those kinds of things.
So they can call the conservation district office if they have any questions about that as well. Okay.
Right.
That's 404-3439. You wanted to talk about CoAgMet too. Dennis, and I completely forgot about that until just now.
Well, I appreciate is for not getting into the Colorado Water Plan with all of this, but the CoAgMet, it stands for the Colorado Agricultural Meteorological Site, and we've got two of these sites in our area that landowners can look at hourly whenever they want and get soil temperatures, wind speeds, the intensity of the sun, all to help determine what the ET rate or evapotranspiration rate is for a given crop on a given day, thus helping landowners determine how much irrigation waters they should be applying as they sum up those days. So you go 10 days and you needed a quarter of an inch of water a day, you need to effectively put on 2.5 inches of water.
Where are the two CoAgMet stations in this area?
Okay. One is very near the center of Silt Mesa. You just take a geographic circle of Silt Mesa, right in the middle on Virginia Hunt's property.
Okay, so that would help folks between Rifle and Newcastle or Silt.
Exactly. Okay. Rifle, Silt, even Newcastle, do a little interpolation and it'll work. The other one is right on the county line between Garfield County and Pitkin County as you're going up the Crystal River.
Okay, up 133.
Up 133. And it's about 200 yards off of Highway 133 on Bill Fayle's property.
I'm trying to remember, the county line is just a little bit past the Prince Creek turnoff, isn't it? Does that sound
yes,
right?
Yes, okay. It's a mile south, something like that.
Okay, so somewhere in that area. So that would be useful to people, obviously, in the Crystal Valley, Missouri Heights maybe, with a little interpolation,
exactly,
as you would say.
Exactly.
Okay. How much does it cost to install a coagnet station?
The initial installation was about $10,000.
And can you get a cost share for that from one of the conservation districts?
No. We might assist you in finding grant monies to do that.
Okay.
The big one on this isn't that initial installation. It's the $2,000 that CSU's charges for the annual maintenance and supplying the data, interpolating the data, and sending the reports out.
Okay. So this is a cooperative thing with Colorado State University.
Exactly.
Okay. And if you have questions about that, you can also call the Conservation District office at 404-3439. Anything else from either one of you? I feel like the three of us had a good time. I hope there's some useful information out there for everybody
exactly.
listening today. But any final comments, Peter?
I can't think of any other than our due dates for the weed cost share are July 12th if you want to submit a cost share application. So,
okay.
And then we have one in fall as well, and that's November 8th. So you don't have to do it right away. You got time if you want to get those weeds later on.
Right. There are a number of deadlines throughout the year, just depending on when you want to do the work.
Correct.
I guess. Okay. Dennis, anything else from you?
Oh, don't give me the chance. But, but yeah, we started out as a soil conservation service or soil erosion service. Our main, historically, our main focus was on soils and treating soils, reducing soil erosion. But since then, we've looked at all natural resources. We look at soil, water, plants, animals, and air. And that's basically the resources that we work with in agriculture. We also look at the human aspects, the economics, the social, the cultural, all of those effects that people have on soils when we start working with those other resources.
Remind me, I'm going back to elementary school here. Was it the conservation districts that came up with the idea of crop rotation? So that you don't, wear out the ground?
That's part of this. Okay. That's part of this strip cropping we talked about earlier.
Okay.
It is a basic crop rotation. A strip of nothing being grown there. And then next year, we're going to have a crop grown there. Next year, nothing.
So you give it some rest.
Okay.
You give the soil some rest.
That's actually when I thought of the crop rotation. I just got distracted with something else. But
right.
So that is a form of it. It's just done
a
little bit
different. A very
simple one. Okay.
Right.
Interesting. All right. All the best, gentlemen. Look forward to next time and another interesting conversation. Again, if you have any questions about the conservation districts, the Ag Expo for next February 1st, or the Tour de Farms bicycle ride on Saturday, August 10th, you can call Sherry at 404-3439. And you can always check out the website, southsidecd.org is a good place to start. I'm pretty sure all three conservation districts actually go to the same place, actually the same place on the interwebs. All the best. Talk to you gentlemen soon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gabe.
You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.